I've lived in New Jersey my entire life, and I've been involved in lots of arts, acting, writing. I even married a musician. But a lot of people don't think New Jersey is known for arts and culture. Well, they're wrong. And my goal is to introduce everyone to the most talented people I know. They're singers, they're writers, they're musicians, they're actors, they're chefs, they're martial artists, they're everything you can imagine, and they're going to be on my show. Every one of them. Well, maybe not every one of them, but a lot of them. So they're in New Jersey, and maybe they're not so famous, but maybe they should be. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey. Back in the day, Rutgers University was made up of several colleges. Douglas College, Rutgers College, Cook College, University College, and Livingston College. Eventually, they decided to combine most of them into just one university. So Livingston College, where I attended, only now exists as Livingston Campus. But there is a Livingston Theater Company, which is really Rutgers' premier musical theater organization. And I was lucky enough to attend a recent performance and then interview some of the production staff. The individuals that I interviewed, who were all female and happened to be some of the best subjects I've ever interviewed, were Kyla Parkin, the director, Bonnie Terenzi, the co-choreographer, Anna Reberg, who was the co-musical director, along with Emma Renzel, and Alexa Garcia, the co-costumes manager. We had a great time during this interview, which took place during an alumni event, so the sound quality isn't the best, but I hope you enjoy it anyway.
My name, again, is Lucille Sapio, and I have been an actor, too. I was in Midsummer Night's Dream here at Livingston College, which was, I think, in 74, maybe. I was three. I've also done a lot of stage work, film, nothing that you've seen, murder mysteries, and I'm a playwright. I did a play called Sex and Garbage. Anybody wants to perform it, let me know. I won't even charge you. So now, as Rosemary said, I'm a podcaster, not so famous in New Jersey. I interview people in the arts. So I'm going to try to record this, and maybe I can use it on my podcast. I saw the show last night, which was excellent, but I'm not going to have any spoilers, so don't worry. So if you haven't already seen it, I'm not going to tell you what happens. So the four people that I'm interviewing, Anna Reberg, Bobby Terenzi,
Bonnie,
how come I have Bobby on here? Change your name. Kyla Parkin.
Kayla.
Kayla Parkin and Shayna Harasty.
Alexa standing in.
And what is your job, Alexis?
Costumes.
Okay, good. So, I know, really good. I'm gonna start with Kayla. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And we're going to switch between people, so get ready to jump up to the mic. So, Kayla, do you come from a theatrical family?
I do not come from a theatrical family. I am one of a kind in the Parkin household.
Okay. So how and why did you get into theater?
Yeah, so when I was growing up, as young girls do, I got thrown into ballet. And I just, like, loved being under the lights. And then when soccer didn't work out and softball didn't work out and lacrosse and all of the sports, I found myself back under the lights in middle school, where I did shows like The Little Mermaid Junior and Fiddler on the Roof Junior. And I knew that I wanted to keep going both on and off stage.
So what other shows have you directed?
I assistant directed Little Shop of Horrors over at Cabaret Theater on our Douglas campus. And I also directed Matilda Jr. Back in my hometown at a summer camp.
Okay, Bonnie or Bobby, neither one. So now, before you develop a dance routine for a show like Beauty and the Beast, what things do you first need to determine?
I look at how many people are in the cast, like what the costumes look like, especially for Beauty and the Beast. The costumes can be crazy. There's plates and clocks and candlesticks and a bunch of crazy things. So things like that, and then also just like, who am I working with? Am I working with people who have years and years of dance experience, mm-hmm. or am I working with people who maybe dance is not their favorite thing in the world, and I just got to meet them where they are?
Now, I want you to know, I still have my Capizios from back in my hustle days. So if you need anybody, I'm available. But you were a dancer as well, right?
Yes, I'm a dance major.
So what skills have you learned as a dancer that have made you a good choreographer, assuming that you're a good choreographer?
I've been choreographing since 7th grade, and I currently work at a dance studio. So working with all different ages and all different abilities and all of those kinds of things has been really something super fulfilling to do. And just, again, meeting people where they are and knowing that at the end of the day, like, I can create the craziest things in the world, but I'm not the one performing them. The people on stage are doing it. So if they're not comfortable and confident in what they're doing, then I haven't done my job right.
Okay. So describe to me the best dance routine that you've seen, and then tell me how you would make it better.
Oh my goodness. That's a crazy question.
Yeah, I'm pretty crazy. Yeah.
Like, my favorite dance I've ever seen, like, it was... has to be the Rockettes. I love them to pieces. They are what made me realize that I wanted to be a dancer.
That's why you had that Rockette scene in the show.
I genuinely don't know how I would make that better. I think it's just an incredible experience, and I've gotten to see their Christmas show, I think, 3 times now, and getting to bring, like, I brought my sister to go see them, and I brought my husband to go see them, so, like, getting to watch other people watch, dance, and fall in love with it is, I think, the best part of it.
Great. Okay, Shayna. Shayna, is that, did I get it right?
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry, what is your name again?
Alexa.
Alexa, you're yes. Shayna tonight. So now, in high school, we did a production of The Glass Menagerie, and I was the wardrobe mistress, which is what they called us back in the day. So the most exciting part of my job was helping the leading man change his clothes. What's the most exciting thing about the job that you have?
Oh my God. See, that's very relevant because the main job that I have, because there are 3 costume people part of the show, mm-hmm. and I'm just one of them. And so I guess my main job during the show is doing some of the quick changes. Yeah. So I guess I would say my favorite part is, like, being behind the scenes, mm-hmm. but the quick changes are so stressful.
Okay.
But once I get them, it's like, okay, I know I did a good job. Like, it's so satisfying.
So do you work with props also or just costumes?
Mostly costumes.
Well, then you screwed up my question. Did you design the costumes if you were involved in that? Did you rely on earlier productions? Or if you didn't do it, the people that did do it, did they have to rely on earlier productions to decide what costumes would be?
Most of the costumes that, like, most of the elaborate costumes, like the wardrobes and the enchanted objects, were rented. Mm. So that was obviously a huge help. All the other outfits and costumes that we got were from, like, this huge costume room we have, mm-hmm. and we just kind of, like, pick things out and see what worked.
Anna, so you're a student at Mason Gross School of the Arts.
I am.
In addition to being the musical director.
Yes.
And you're involved with the Kirkpatrick Choir.
I am.
And the Voorhees Choir.
Yes.
So how did you find time to do this?
That's a wonderful question. Voorhees and our other musical director is actually right over there, who was involved in all of the same things.
Oh, you can come in here and be in too.
I'm fortunate enough that this semester I'm student teaching. The way that my degree works, instead of doing an extra master's for student teaching, music education, which is also the same major that Anna is, you student teach in your final semester of college. So I'm done by 2. I was also grateful enough that Kayla was really flexible with my availability because I was auditioning for grad schools at the time as well. The rehearsals are late, so rehearsals run from maybe about 7 to 11 p.m., which is really convenient for people like us and probably sometimes harder for other people. But that was how. I'm just fortunate that we have a really great music team and a pro staff and directing team that's willing to work with our crazy schedules.
So Emma, since you're here, what do you feel are the 3 most important aspects of being a music director?
Like Anna said, I am also a vocal music education major. This is my first time working with LTC, but I am conducting the Pitt Orchestra, which has been really super exciting. I think that some of the most important aspects of great MDs that I've seen is flexibility, first of all. As educators, this is a really great experience for us because we have a lot of different types of learners in this atmosphere. So we're used to, in our degree, working with people who are going to school for music, and they can sit down and read a score and all this kind of stuff, but we're actually able to work with people who maybe don't read sheet music and maybe learn better by hearing things. Mm-hmm. So I think flexibility and awareness of the people who you're working with and what kind of the energy is in the room. I think that another thing is
just really being kind and being considerate of the people around you. Today I got a call that one of our trumpet players broke his foot. And so I made like 6 different phone calls around the trumpets. And if you have a good enough reputation of being nice and, you know, considerate, there's enough people who will say, yeah, of course, I'll come by. Like,
so I guess like trumpet players sometimes put their foot in their mouth so it will stop them from playing. Let me go back to Anna. So, have you worked as a musical director before?
I have. This is my 3rd time as a director.
So tell us about one job that went really well.
Okay.
And then tell us about one that went really badly.
Oh, perfect. They were back to back. So my first one, as I was a junior, we did Hunchback. This was last fall, so fall 2022. It was my first time music directing. It wasn't my first time working with ensembles as someone who's involved with choir and music ed, but it was my first time being on this side of the table in the musical sense. So I had Michael Einiger, who is currently our music supervisor. He was my co-music director at the time. We worked really, really well together. We were able to have this back and forth. Hunchback was a very chorally involved score, so we had a separate choir and an ensemble, and that was really great to kind of dip my feet into both pools. The following show was Hair, and everything turned out really, really well in the end, but that was a very difficult process for me. It was a score I was completely unfamiliar with, and I was piano conducting at the same time. The circumstances in my life at that time were also making it difficult.
So, college students with problems.
But they were, I'm very grateful for both experiences because I was able to take away so much from both. To have a process that went near perfectly to then be followed by a process where I was felt like I was struggling every 5 seconds, but it came together really well in the end.
Thank you. So, Bonnie, or Bobby, whatever. How important is it to integrate the storyline into the moves that you choreograph?
So specifically with musical theater choreography, I listen to the words a lot and I choreograph mostly to the words. Like if there's a little like ding, I love that, but they're dancing and they're singing, so trying to connect it to the words makes it easier for them and easier for me. And then also, this is all about storytelling. We're telling the story. So if it's all, they're talking about how they're sad and they're not having a good time, I'm not gonna throw a tap number up. Yeah. That feels insane. And that's just also jarring as an audience member for that juxtaposition.
And so, by the way, I have tap shoes too.
But you're ready.
I'm ready.
30 minutes.
Okay. So when you have a performer that's struggling to learn a routine, how do you proceed?
I always, at the first rehearsal, I'm like, okay, my number's in the contact sheet. Please text me if you have any questions. Like, I've had people who are struggling a lot, so I'll send them a video of me slowly breaking it down and being like, okay, here's the movement. This is how this leads into that. I've had people who are like, can we set up a time to meet? I'm like, yes, of course. So I just really try to make myself as available as I can be, whether that be through videos or through, like, in-person meetings.
Fake Shayna. What was the most difficult costume to work on for this production? Because I know you rented some, but some of them were made. So what was the most difficult one?
The most difficult made? That's hard. I wouldn't know.
I think
maybe the salt and pepper. Right. Because the salt and pepper are like, they're part of the enchanted objects,
yes.
But we didn't like the costume that came with the rented ones. So we made them ourselves. So that definitely took a while.
And it took me a couple of minutes to figure out they were salt and pepper. I'm going, huh, what? Oh, I get it. Black and white, got it. Okay. How do the costumes, what do you think the costumes, what effect do they have on the success of a production?
On the success of any production?
Yeah.
I think they're, like, depending on the show that it is, it can have a very big impact. Like, I feel like for this show specifically, it has a huge impact. For others, like the first show we did this season, Rent, it was like a lot of people using their own clothes, which obviously then the costumes are so important.
Yeah.
But I think it was very nice working on this production and having such a big emphasis on costumes, and that me being a part of that team was very satisfying.
Yeah, I worked in dinner theater a lot, and sometimes we had to come up with our own costumes, or we wanted to come up with because the costumes they gave us were so bad. Like, no, I'll buy my own. All right, let me go back to Kayla. What was one of the hardest things that you had to face in this particular production?
Yeah, that is a great question and a super easy one. So
let me make it hard.
I accepted the role of director on January 17th, And then for the next week and a half, I was completely by myself as I was interviewing different production staff members. And to this day, that is the hardest part about this process, because there was like 9 days where I just wanted to talk about my vision and I wanted to talk about all these things, and I had to wait until I had a production team. And then the second that our production staff was announced, and there's 19 of us, it felt so liberating to be able to not only share my ideas with other people, but also just have that support, because it really does take a village. And there's 21 cast members, and there's 19 production staff members, and 4 e-board people, and I could not have done it like all by myself, and those 9 days really did prove that to be true.
Yeah. So how much of a risk taker are you?
Well, I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie, if that's what you mean, but I take very many risks in the arts, especially behind the scenes.
Did you take any risks in this production?
Honestly, I think just being a second semester senior and taking on this huge project was a risk in itself, because I'm like, I am trying to graduate in 10 days. I think that was a risk in itself, and I would do it over and over and over again.
So sometimes, and I know probably never happened to you, you get an actor who's a real ham, and they are screwing it up for everybody else. I'm not saying in this show.
I've got 2 more days. Don't get me in trouble. Yeah.
But so how do you deal with someone that's really disruptive, whether it's being a hammer or just joking around too much when you want them to be serious?
Yeah, I think that I am a very serious person in general. And so I did have those worries, especially as a student-run theater organization, where I was like, I am an authority figure in terms of production staff, but I also go to parties with these people and we go to the dining halls together. And so establishing that sort of sense of communication and cooperation can definitely be hard. But something that I did right off the bat was set expectations. I was like, you come 10 minutes early or not at all. You let me know if you're having conflicts. We set expectations for roles in the production staff sense. And so I think that way I'm communicating my expectations. And then when you come to me and say, well, I didn't know you wanted that, I could basically say, well, I did all my job, you know? And that also helps with a little bit of leeway. Both I can loosen up a little bit, and they can sort of get their act together too. So I haven't had really too many problems with this process, which I've been really grateful for.
Now, is Greasy Tony still around?
Greasy Tony's is not still around.
You guys know what Greasy Tony's is, yeah. Yeah, it's an institution. I'm assuming you don't have an unlimited budget when you're putting on a show at Livingston. Yeah.
Not even close.
So how do you ensure that you stay within budget for a production?
Well, I do have a shopping addiction, so that was my biggest challenge. We have a really great business team that does keep us in line. Something that I was advocating a lot for during this process is fundraising, so that we could not only start with our base budget, but then push it a little bit here and there. Something that really did help was having people in specific teams that knew exactly how things work. So I would have spent $8,000 on lighting if I could, because I know nothing about lighting. And similarly, we had a great costume team and a great music team who knew things about keyboard programming and sewing, and so that we could sort of thrift our way through this process as much as we could.
Anna and Emma, right? Yeah, I remembered your name.
At least you get it right. Most people swap us all the time. Yeah.
So I've been in theater myself for many years, as I've said, and I understand how important rehearsals are. I am sure music rehearsals go to a whole different level than regular dramatic productions. So can you describe, either one of you or both can answer, how do you go about coordinating a music rehearsal?
Yeah, well, we have the really lucky part of that. We actually don't have to do much of it, but the way our stage managers... So our stage managers help create schedules, right? They get everybody's availability, and then based off of that, Emma and I and Michael's mom, Gavin, coordinate with Kayla about which would be best to do when there, as far as difficulty of the piece, how many people are involved. Okay, if we have this number of people on this day, would it be better to do this number this day? But really, our excellent stage managers take everybody's availability, they kind of plug it all in, and all right, okay, here's who we have, what should we do? And that's really how that sort of works.
Yeah. So that's for our cast, but I've also been coordinating all of our pit musicians. So we have a 19-piece pit orchestra that you all hear, which is really exciting.
I was wondering last night whether that was recorded or live.
Yes, live pit. We're all behind the stage.
But that's it's intense because of the workload that instrumentalists have within their degree here as well. So that's a big thing of like, it's best to rehearse on Douglas because that's where Mason Gross is, that's where the Mason Gross students are. And so when can we reserve, when can we book spaces there, and when are the instrumentalists free so we can practice and like all these things. And when you've got 19 instrumentalists and 21 cast members, how do you find the right time to do a synth probe and have everyone together in the same room? So it's a balancing act.
So Anna, you play the violin, right?
I play the viola, but not much anymore.
Well, you know, I always wanted to play the violin. I bought myself one and I tried to teach myself to play. Do you think I was being a little too optimistic?
Absolutely not. It's never too late to start. Yeah.
Well, when you have nails, you can't play the violin.
Yes, you know, I have a viola student who yells at me anytime I come in with long nails. And she's like, what are you doing?
Okay, Bonnie, or Bobby. As you choreograph, you need to have discipline as well as creativity and strong interpretive skills. What do you think is the most important?
I think the most important part, let me ask, of choreographing or of learning choreography?
Of choreographing.
Adaptability. Because I can go in with a plan and I can be like, okay, it's my way or the highway, but that's not realistic.
Yeah.
Especially in a student setting. If something is not working, it's better for me to just say, okay, that may not be the way we go about it, and then just flip it on a dime, than to try and force my idea to happen.
Right.
Sounds good.
How would you go about choreographing a dance without first hearing the music?
Oh, goodness. Sometimes, I also choreograph 9 to 5, and so with that one, I came in more with ideas, and I was like, okay, I like this movement pattern, and I like this kind of thing, and I created it when I got in the room and I saw who I had and I saw what was happening. So if I didn't know what the music was going to be before I walked into the room, that would probably be more of the approach I would take. But with Beauty and the Beast, like, I know that music so well, so I was like, okay, this is what I want.
And not everybody was a dancer.
No.
Right. Are these like basically the same dance numbers that they did on the Broadway stage, or are they very different?
I make it a point to not watch previous productions, because if I watch a previous production, I'm going to be like, wow, I really like that. And then suddenly it's not my work,
right.
It's whoever choreographed it before.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So let's see. Kayla, as an actor, I was once cast in a student production, it was at Brookdale College, as the great Nebula in Orion. I don't know if you know that show. The notes from the student director lasted longer than the actual scene that we did. A note for every single line, what we should say, how we should emphasize each word. So what's your approach? Do you do line reads, or you leave it up to the actor's discretion?
I try not to, especially early on. I try to see, because I'm not all-knowing, especially when the show is prominent as Beauty and the Beast, there's so many interpretations, so I try not to be as nitpicky. When we get into the space, however, when microphones get into it and there's lighting issues and things like that that we have to work around, often the nitpicky things are so important. So, for example, we have the person playing Belle's dad, Maurice, was saying something along the lines of, I don't know why that happened, as opposed to, I don't know why that happened. And often that can change the interpretation of the line in the scene altogether. And so line readings like that and nitpicky notes like that often help the audience understand. And after you've been doing a scene 100 times over again, you don't know what sounds right and what's going to be like, what it gets interpreted in different ways.
So is it okay for an actor to ask why they didn't get a part? And how often has that happened to you?
For this production, it happened a lot, and I think that for this type of theater company, it happens a lot because we are peers and we are our friends. I think that it is completely understandable to want feedback. It's also hard because it's often just right place, right time. You never know when new freshmen are coming in or new members are joining that didn't have the skills last winter that do this winter. And so I think going about it in a respectful way is totally okay.
Do we have a couple more minutes here, Rosemary? We're done, huh? Oh, I guess we're done. Thank you all so very much.
I love the arts, and I love to talk, and that's why I'm talking to local artists. And if you like listening, then subscribe to my podcast. You can do it on this page, on iTunes, or anywhere you get podcasts. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey.